We're talking about a new report from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago called the Industrial Cities Initiative. The report looks at 10 Midwestern industrial towns in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Jeremiah Boyle is with us now to talk about the report and its conclusions. He's the Managing Director of Economic Development for the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Jerry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be with you.
So let's just start with some basics here. How do you define an industrial city?
Well, for purposes of our study, we defined industrial cities as cities that in 1960 had a population of at least 50,000 and 25% of its employment in manufacturing.
Okay, and what cities are we talking about here?
Well, in Wisconsin, we're talking the ones that we profiled, which is not a complete list of all the industrial cities in the Midwest. The Wisconsin cities that we profiled were Green Bay and Racine. We also did Waterloo and Cedar Rapids in Iowa, Joliet and Aurora in Illinois, Gary, Indiana, and Fort Wayne, Indiana, and then Grand Rapids and Pontiac, Michigan. So we did two in each of the states that we cover in the Federal Reserve's district.
So you looked at these 10 cities, and what was the goal of the report? What were you looking for?
Really what we're trying to determine in this report is, given the fact that all of the cities that we profiled had all the same characteristic of a loss of manufacturing employment, we wanted to see why some of those cities seem to have been outperform their peer cities and why some of them seem to have underperformed their cities. And if you'd like, I could give a little bit of an explanation of what outperforming or underperforming means in this report.
Absolutely, sure.
Okay. What we did was we looked at if manufacturing employment were the only explanatory variable for the economic outcomes for these cities over the period from 1960 to today, what would those cities look like in terms of their total population, their total employment, and their median family incomes? The cities that we identify as outperforming their peers are really the ones who had outcomes that were better than the model predicted, and the underperforming were those that underperformed what the model predicted, if manufacturing employment were the only predictive variable.
And in looking at your summary, it's interesting. You have the prediction of the outcomes of the cities themselves, and there was also a bigger question that was embedded in there. It sounds like with a global world, you were wondering, could the Midwest itself survive? How viable was the Midwest? That's a big question. Do you think these 10 cities represent the Midwest as a whole?
In many ways, they do. Statisticians would not call them representative, but we do think we got a pretty good sampling of various dynamics that are at work in these types of cities. So we know from the general literature that the outcome for industrial cities, whether it be here in the Midwest or the Northeast, can generally be explained by a number of variables, but two very important ones are, number one, the extent to which employment in these cities was concentrated in manufacturing in 1960, and number two, the extent to which there is an education deficit within these cities. So those two variables alone can explain 40% of the outcome for these cities, but the interesting thing is that there's about 60% of the outcome for these cities that really are open to different ways that local leaders and local decision makers can have an influence on what direction the city goes, especially when they're talking about how to diversify their own local economies.
How do the industrial cities in the Midwest that we're talking about here, how do they compare with industrial cities in other parts of the country?
Well, the only really good comparison is with the Northeast. There are plenty of mill towns and mining towns in the Southeast. But for the most part, the industrial cities in this country were really pretty much concentrated in what has come to be known as the Rust Belt. At one point, they were known as the Arsenal of Democracy, where the Arsenal of Democracy was created. But those are all spread through the Midwest and the Northeast. And the interesting thing of comparing those two is that While we in the Midwest had a kind of a manufacturing renaissance in the mid-90s, that is, employment seemed to be picking up a little bit for Midwest manufacturing, manufacturing in the Northeast continued to decline. So while the Midwest had a little bit of a renaissance, which slowed but did not reverse the decline of manufacturing employment. So that's really the only comparison, is that the Northeast seems to have gotten farther along in the transition to a more diversified economy a little bit sooner than the Midwest has.
So it sounds like that trend has hit the Midwest as well after that little burst in the 90s, which leads to that popular notion that manufacturing cities, they're dead, and it's sort of an epitaph of sorts. How does the data measure up? Is this true? Are manufacturing cities dead, or at least as far as manufacturing goes?
Actually, the more time you spend in some of these cities, the more you realize that they are far from dead. One of the interesting things to observe, and you can see this sort of graphically in the report, and we do encourage people to go and see the report for themselves at chicagofed.org. It's right up there at the top of our homepage, is that there is this popular notion of what these cities look like, and it's all based on the worst of the worst of these cities. So a bankrupt Detroit with the images of nothing but abandoned buildings and that kind of thing tends to be people's image. But when you look at these cities compared to each other and compared to trends overall in the U.S., many of them come across as being not nearly as bad as one would think, and some of them come out looking much better.
Now, Green Bay is an interesting example. I know in your new report you didn't sort of pit one city against another and compare them that way, but Green Bay is a city that has come back. What is Green Bay doing?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, Green Bay is one of those cities that, when as compared to the other cities in our population that we studied, did not have as high a concentration of manufacturing employment to begin with. So their fall was a little bit smaller. However, there are some very interesting things going on in Green Bay that we do think may be a good thing for other cities to know about, and that is, leadership in these cities is a very important characteristic for those cities that seem to have outperformed their peers. And it's a very specific kind of leadership. It's not an individual leader providing that leadership. It is a group of leaders that have come together who are able to articulate an economic development vision that is shared broadly around the community. They're able to marshal the resources to implement that vision, and they're able to implement that vision over time. All of these cities are dealing with very long-term trends that they're trying to address, and therefore they can't really depend on renewing or reviewing their strategies every 4 years or so. They need to have a leadership group in place that can sustain these efforts over time.
Now, when you talk about a group of leaders that has a common vision and they implement this vision over time, does that just sort of happen organically? Is it, you know, sort of serendipity, or is it something that can be consciously recreated in a different city?
I think it is consciously recreated. The interesting thing is the catalyst for bringing a group like that together can vary from place to place. In some places, it does come together around a charismatic leader, although that's by and large, I think, the exception to the rule. There are some cities where philanthropy is really the catalyst to bring people together around the table. In Green Bay, it happened to be a manufacturing alliance that brought people together to say, you know, we have issues in business, but we also have issues with our education system, and we are better off working on these things together than we are having several different competing visions.
So Green Bay is a city that is moving in a good direction. It has a big paper industry now. Racine is a city that has, according to past reports of yours, been struggling a bit more. How is Racine faring?
Yeah, you know, to say that Racine has been struggling a little bit more is probably not what I would choose to say these days, because, number one, it's not that they're struggling now. It's that from the beginning of the study period, they had, again, a much higher concentration in manufacturing employment. Their manufacturing employment started at closer to 50%. And so their decline was steeper during the course of the study.
You called them in your 2012 report a fading city. So what does that mean?
Well, that was an attempt to try to simplify the different elements of the initial regression analyses to compare the relative changes in manufacturing employment as compared to the other metrics that we were using. And in 2012, we sort of paused what we were doing in our study and produced a white paper to invite the leaders of these various cities to see what we were doing, to give us some input, and then to be able to expand upon our initial findings. And so Racine becomes a very interesting sort of case study for us, because while they did have the steeper decline, and based on the data alone, it might fit into that kind of category, but it's hard to describe Racine as fading now when you think about the fact that they have put themselves in many ways on a world stage by participating in the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, with their fresh water work in Racine, but also in this effort to try to tie together a coherent regional entity around Chicago in this sort of tri-state Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana economic entity.
We're talking right now with Jerry Boyle of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago about their new report on industrial cities in the Midwest and how they're faring.
And that report, by the way, is available on the Central Time Facebook page if you'd like to check it out. But we'd like to hear from you, too. Do you live in one of these industrial Midwestern cities in Green Bay or in Racine? How are things looking there? How have they changed since 1960? And what do you think can be done to improve things in your community? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or drop us an email at talk@wpr.org.
We're continuing our conversation now with Jerry Boyle of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago about the bank's new report on Midwestern industrial cities.
And we'd like to hear from you on this topic. Do you know an industrial Midwestern city either in Wisconsin or maybe in Iowa or Illinois? Is it a place you used to live or that you live now? How are things looking there? How have things changed in the past 30 or 40 years? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org.
And Jerry, we were just talking about how the 2012 report, you had categorizations of cities, and some were fading and some were sort of thriving a little bit more. You haven't done that in this new report. Why did you make that choice not to use categorizations?
Well, for two reasons, actually. Number one, we do not wish to pass judgment on any of these cities. What we'd like to do is have these cities be in a place where they could learn from each other and perhaps even cooperate on certain things where that makes sense. There's also a second issue that as we looked deeper behind the data that we had used for the preliminary analysis, there were some cities that appeared to be outperforming their peers more dramatically than it turns out they really are. So some cities that seemed to have a lot of population growth and were able to have an increase in their median family income, it turns out a lot of that story was really about annexation. They were able to take in more land and annex communities around them more recently than a number of their peers. So a lot of the population growth and growth in wealth really was not what you would think of as organic growth. It was that they were able to reach out and bring that growth into the city. And that's really not a tool that is generally available for similarly situated cities. So we wanted to be a little bit careful to place these cities in the wrong context, or to not place them in the wrong context. So we were more careful in this report to not be making those kinds of judgments.
I want to go to the phones right now. Let's take a caller here. This is Paul joining us from Racine. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing just great. I just got off of work. I'm on my way home.
That's always a good feeling. So you're in Racine. What is your take on this?
Well, I was born and raised in Racine, and I really got to say I love this town. I mean, I bought a house 3 years ago when the market was low, and I know a lot of people have been saying that with lower housing prices, you know, comes a lot of, you know, judgment from the censuses and that, but I think it's more of a generational change. I mean, not only did I buy a house in the neighborhood, but my cousin bought a house next to me and that, and, you know, it's we're building our own community together there, and a lot of people in town have always been saying that Racine's been one of the biggest small towns you'll ever know.
And it sounds like you've seen some changes in the past couple of years that have been good ones.
Yeah, there have been a lot of good changes. There have been a lot of festivals in town. We have, like, Party on the Pavement, and there have been jet ski races the past couple of years, which we've never had before. Racine's got one of the nicest beaches. I know people from Milwaukee that will drive all the way down just to hang out at our beach.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for giving us your take on Racine. That was Paul we were talking to there. And Jerry, he was kind of getting at some of the community things there, the sense of place and well-being, things that bring a community together. How do factors like that work in this picture?
Well, they're obviously very hard to quantify, but he's absolutely right that is an important story for all of these cities, the extent to which they are able to make their cities more livable, even in the face of a number of their challenges. And this goes back to what I said in the beginning, is that there are a lot of things that don't show up in the data that were very important for us to get that story and combine that with the data, because that really does supplement what the data tells you. The data alone don't tell you everything you need to know about these cities. And the improvement in the quality of life in a number of these cities is obviously very important. Reclamations of waterfronts and reclaiming and renovating downtowns are very important characteristics, because the other thing that shows up is the people in these cities who maintain that level of civic pride and spread the word about these cities and the advantages that they have really do offer that glimmer of hope, even for the most underperforming cities. So you get a city like Gary, Indiana, where part of the emerging story is the extent to which people who grew up in Gary went somewhere else and have had successful careers, but now are coming back because they're getting the sense that they're coming in at the ground floor to help revitalize the city in which they were born. I think that's a very important but hard to quantify story that is emerging in a number of these cities.
In terms of other six cities that are outperforming what the expected would have been, what are the big takeaways here for all of these industrial cities?
From the cities that are outperforming?
Right, for the success stories, what are they doing?
Yeah, again, the number one story, I think, is that leadership group that has come together that has all of those characteristics of a shared vision, the ability to marshal the resources, and the ability to implement that over time. And the other thing that I forgot to say earlier is that, by and large, those cities are able to put together that strategy and put it in the context of at least a regional setting, if not a global setting. So that's the other thing about a city like Green Bay, is that Green Bay is really not going it alone. They are central to an 18-county region that becomes a lot more interesting in the global context, because it's got a much bigger labor shed, and the fact that it's coordinated means that they can attract businesses and help businesses grow in a way that is simpler than it would be for some communities where every city and every individual community is trying to implement an economic development strategy and going it alone.
And what about educating workers and helping them find jobs that might not be what they were used to, educating them and finding placement for them?
That is the most commonly shared challenge for all of the leaders in these communities. And that is that while the trends in all of these cities tends to be very good, the percentage of their population that has no high school diploma has been decreasing, the percentage of their population that has a college degree has been increasing, but for most of these cities, even as those trends are positive, They're having trouble closing the gap with the rest of the country. So while it's still necessary to continue on that, it remains a challenge to close the gap with the rest of the country so that the competitive advantage that other places have with regards to a qualified workforce would begin to diminish.
And to touch on just another aspect as we get close to our time here, you say that race and diversity, they present both a challenge and an opportunity. How do you see that coming into play right now?
Well, right now, a number of cities sort of struggle with this. And when you think about the leadership types of groups that I've been talking about, a number of these cities self-report that the ability to include a diverse set of voices and the voices of the less well-off, in some cases, they actually call it their own Achilles heel. And there is some research out there that indicates that even in communities around the country that have had a good deal of job creation, just but that number by itself, a lot of those metro areas also have the biggest increase in poverty rate, which sort of opens the whole debate about income inequality in that. What that means is that you get a growing number of working poor, that even as jobs are created, which tends to be the holy grail of a lot of economic development strategies, the job creation number by itself appears to not be enough, that even as jobs grow, there's a kind of a hollowing out that you see in cities like this where the wages are not keeping up with the living wage of a community. The poverty rate is going up in these communities, even as the rent burden in these communities is going up.
Well, so Jerry,
yes,
you left us with a challenge there, but it sounds like a lot for these cities to celebrate and keep on improving. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about it.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Jeremiah Boyle, Managing Editor of Economic Development for the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago.